Recent events, of course, have turned the spotlight on the issue of race in modern America, and the current cultural climate calls out for more research, education, dialogue, and understanding. In the new book, Race and Social Change, A Quest, A Study, A Call to Action, a social science experiment with the potential to address these needs is explained. Through an analysis grounded in the perspectives of social psychology, complex systems, and critical race theory, the inquiry at the heart of the book explores the dynamics of race and social change in surprising ways. Author Max Clow explains how his own quest for insight into these matters led to his study of a youth leadership program known as the Separation Exercise. Max Clow is the chief program officer at the New Politics Leadership Academy and author of the book Race and Social Change, and we welcome him to the roundtable this morning. Max, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Very nice to have you on the program. Let us begin with what your quest was here.
Yeah, I grew up middle-class, straight, white person in a Connecticut suburb and always knew that race was a really important issue in America, divisive and controversial, and just felt like I didn't understand how it worked. And that was really kind of a 20-year quest to just live with this question of what is true about race and social change. And that was to try and understand that was years and years of work.
Okay, so then we get to the study. So talk about the studies that had been in place and then what you ultimately developed.
Well, so there's a long tradition of classic social psychology experiments, which some listeners have surely heard of, like the Milgram experiment by Stanley Milgram, a Yale professor in the 60s, really interested in the Holocaust and how ordinary citizens could be cruel to their fellow citizens. And this is the famous kind of shock experiment where a subject was administering questions to somebody in another room. If the person gave the wrong question, they give different level shocks. And they didn't know it wasn't actually shocking the person. And the question was, if an authority was telling this person to continue, would they all go all the way up to administering what they thought were lethal level shocks? And, you know, 60% of the subjects went all the way up to what they thought was a lethal level when an authority figure was saying you have to continue doing this. So kind of a classic study of obedience. There's another Stanford prison experiment happened in a basement in Stanford where they created a simulated prison, kind of took 22 students, randomly divided them into prisoners and guards. And this simulation was supposed to run for 2 weeks. They had to stop it after 6 days because the prisoners got so kind of cruel and just aggressive. And the prisoners were clearly so disturbed and, you know, having such a difficult time. So there's this kind of tradition of really classic social psychology experiments that illuminate obedience and conformity and intergroup conflict and cooperation. And the study at the center of this book extends that tradition in some new ways.
Without being unethical or cruel.
Well, you know, I do talk, all of this stuff is ethically challenging. And I talk about that very clearly in the book. I made a very thoughtful decision that this was worth doing. I was given all the factors, I thought it was worth focusing on this. But there's no doubt that this whole type of research raises ethical questions, and I don't want to be cavalier about that or suggest it's not an important consideration.
So tell us about your study and ultimately what you learned from the other studies and what you were trying to avoid.
Interesting. Well, I was getting a doctorate in education, studying the topic of youth leadership, and that is when I stumbled on a program called Camp Anytown, which is a week-long residential youth leadership program. It's been running for 60 years, happens all across the country, and it's a week-long residential program for about 40 very diverse high school students, spending a week really intensely engaging in discussion and exploration of isms like racism and sexism and that sort of thing. But it was an exercise on the last day that really changed the course of my life. And what happened was the participants gathered in a circle before breakfast, as they did every day. But on this last day, something really unusual happened. The directors told them to separate into groups, whites, Asians, Jews, Latinos, LGBTQ, blacks, and very sternly said, don't talk to members of other groups and don't make eye contact with anybody in another group. And then they went into breakfast and the white kids went in first and had unlimited food and a big table to sit at. And every group lower in the hierarchy had fewer resources to the point where the black kids were sitting on the floor with very little to eat. And they call it the separation exercise. And it is an attempt to simulate a segregated, hierarchical, unjust, Jim Crow-style social system. But the educational purpose is to give participants a chance to challenge these systems. So what I saw happen between breakfast and lunch that day was events unfolded that really mirrored the real-life civil rights movement in some really powerful ways. So I realized here was a chance to kind of study in some scientifically rigorous way how does social change happen in these kind of systems. And I ended up watching three more of them and observing them and analyzing them, and that's the study at the heart of the book.
Are there things, I mean, you get the sense from the book, but there are things that become readily apparent very quickly, and then the things that you have to take a deeper dive and looking at to fully understand.
Yeah, when I started studying this, I thought I was just going to see who challenges things first and how do groups start to come together. And, you know, I was thinking about it at that level. But what ended up happening was the three exercises I observed, all of them went very differently. And to understand how all of that went differently required thinking about a system as a whole in a way that was just really counterintuitive. So there were clear patterns in all exercises. There was about 2 hours of stasis, like nothing changed. And then there was a tipping point where you got a fast, kind of change happened really rapidly. It was always members of the kind of lower groups in the hierarchy, the people of color, who were the first to challenge the systems. There were these patterns that were really simple to see and, appeared across all of them. But there is definitely this whole systems level of thinking that is just counterintuitive and takes some deep thinking to really understand how it works.
You were the sole white member of the three-member research team observing the exercises. What role do you think that played and obviously into your perspective?
Well, I knew doing this research that it was essential that I have people with different backgrounds observing this with me. I'm aware that as a white person, I have blind spots. I have ways of seeing and thinking about things, and I needed to make sure I was doing this on a team. And one of my questions doing this research was, would we watch events unfold in these systems and then really see different things? Because I do think in the real world, that's, it's one of the reasons why I felt so called to study this, is because things happen in the real world and everybody sees it differently, takes different lessons from it, assumes it means different things. But that didn't really happen. In these exercises, we were really kind of outside of the system. And, we would get together afterwards and we all pretty quickly agreed, yeah, this is what we saw happen. And this person went and talked to that person and that's when this happened. And so there was, that dynamic of really seeing things differently didn't show up in the research. But of course, people had different, were kind of resonated to different parts of the system. And it was helpful to have multiple eyes on one system to be able to see different things happening in different parts. And of course, there were really thoughtful people who helped with the analysis and really pushed my thinking and kind of how to make meaning of what we were seeing there.
So in that meaning, you contend the findings has to do with the interdependence between our inner and outer worlds. You say how our inner lives relate to and bring forth the world in which we live. How so? What does that mean?
Well, it relates to that finding that I referenced, that the three exercises I observed, they all unfolded in dramatically different ways. And in trying to understand it, and I go into detail in the book, it seemed to be that the systems reflected the way of being of the people in charge. So if somebody was really kind of autocratic and didn't distribute any power, there was very little distributed power in the system. And if somebody was kind of all compassion, there was a lot of connectedness, but there also wasn't empowerment. And there was one where there was this real mix of ability to kind of hold power and compassion together. And that was the system that generated the closest dynamics to real life, with this self-organized nonviolent protest and just this kind of creativity emerged from that. And it was a finding that only pops into view when you can see the whole system, is how kind of the people in charge created this social field that somehow infused the system and made certain things possible and other things very unlikely. And it really you know, challenges us to see the connection between kind of our way of being and the systems that we call forth around us.
So with this information, where do you think we go from here? What action can we take?
Well, a first thing is I do hope the book invites people to understand this from a higher consciousness. It's very hard to really understand these systems when we're immersed in them. And I also know, as you know, my path is kind of a privileged white person who understands myself to be progressive, but I'm very clear about just how little I understood because of kind of the bubble I had grown up in and how much I had to attain a higher consciousness to understand the reality of these systems and then engage with them in a way that was effective and not just reproducing dynamics that I would have, you know, didn't think were ideal. So there's important work around consciousness. And then, you know, I talk in the book, everybody comes into the system at a particular place in the system in their own development. And each of us, the challenge is to just kind of step into our challenge zone around this and step out of what is comfortable, connect across boundaries, and start to work with the system in some way that is personally challenging for us. And, you know, for some people, they're at the very first steps of this. Other people are ready to run for Congress. They've been doing this for years. But the invitation is, what does it mean to step into your challenge zone? And then the book ends with a call for national service at the national level. I do think this challenge of race is, it's been here since the founding of the country. It's a big challenge. It requires a big solution. And I think having every young adult in this country do a year of service where they have to serve alongside people from different backgrounds, working on a cause larger than self, that would really weave together our civic fabric and kind of address some of these deep challenges in a really national, you know, bold way.
Max Clough is the author of Race and Social Change, A Quest, A Study, A Call to Action. Max, thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the name of the book is Race and Social Change. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.